You're listening to the World of Higher Education podcast, Season 3, Episode 16.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Usher, and this is the World of Higher Education podcast. If you're a really faithful listener, you may remember that when this show was in beta, we were fooling around with formats and guests. We did an episode about Mexican higher education and its tribulations under the populist president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO for short. Our guest that day was my friend Alma Maldonado Maldonado, an education researcher at CINESTAB, which is the Center for Research and Advanced Studies of the National Polytechnic Institute. That interview was so brilliant, we turned this podcast into a full-time investigation of higher education developments in various countries around the world. Today, Alma's back with us again to talk about how things have and have not changed in Mexico over the past 2 years. The big story there is that there's a new president in town. Last spring, Claudia Sheinbaum became the country's first ever woman president, one who happens to have a PhD in engineering with a specialty in energy and sustainability. You'd think that might be an advantage to a higher education sector, but Sheinbaum comes from AMLO's Morena party, and her instincts seem to be to continue her predecessor's tradition of attacking higher education as being a dissolute elite enterprise. So what does this mean for Mexican higher education? Well, in general, it's not good. Alma takes us through the implications of Morena's supermajority in Congress, as well as its early attempts to put fiscal pressure on universities, and its continued fascination with the experimental and kind of shambolic Benito Juarez universities. Spoiler alert, there are not a lot of silver linings in this story, either for public or private sector universities in Mexico. But enough from me, let's hand things over to Alma to explain. Alma, thanks for being with us. When we talked almost 2 years ago, then President López Obrador had about a year to go in his mandate, year and a half, and he was basically at war with the university sector and the scientific community. How did his regime end with respect to higher education? Did anything change? Did things get better or worse in his final months? Any policy shifts we should know about?
Hi, Alex. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, I think most of the things didn't change. Basically, things continue the same. And his rhetoric, his narrative against higher education institutions, against graduates from abroad, against, in general, UNAM, for instance, continue at the end of his period, unfortunately. So there was anything to make him change that rhetoric. And I think it's because he had the political pulse, right? I mean, he knew his base was all with him, and why changing, right? Something that is working. And on the contrary, the attacks to the university, the restriction of resources and all these things, unfortunately, they continued.
And so nothing was resolved then. But then earlier this year, there were elections for the presidency and for both the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate. Did education play any role in this election, or and higher education specifically? Was it an area where there were serious differences between parties?
Yeah, I haven't seen debates in Canada, presidential debates, but I have seen debates in the U.S. And I think it's kind of the same. Education is not there. You know, it's not important. Few mentions here and there about education, but in general, there were no part, like key part of the campaigns. What happened during the elections in Mexico is that it was a kind of a theory of offering scholarships. I will offer scholarships in secondary education. Yes, well, I will offer in scholarships in secondary, but also in primary education. And I will offer in preschool. So that was the main policy discussed, unfortunately, between the two main candidates. And that was the tone of the campaign, unfortunately. And I think that's similar in other countries. So, yeah, I am not surprised about that. But it's really sad that when in a country like Mexico, when education can be that thing that help people or, you know, the steer that drives social change, it is not there.
Yeah. Well, so the victor in the election was Claudia Sheinbaum of the Morena Party. So that's the same party as AMLO. But, you know, at least superficially, she's got kind of a different image, right? She's a scientist. She has an advanced degree from UNAM, a doctorate, I think. So does her arrival signal a different kind of relationship between the presidency and higher education? What do we know about her policies?
Well, it's complicated, you know, but on paper, she's better. That's definite. She got a PhD at UNAM. She was working as an academic, probably the few cases where you have an academic as president. Not the first one, of course, but I mean, that's a factor. And then she has these ideas or rhetoric pro-science and pro-higher education, especially because she came from the student movement at UNAM in 1995. She fought together with our friend Imanol Ordorica, Carlos Simas' former husband, and Antonio Santos. She was not in the first circle. Actually, she was not a leader, but nowadays they are rewriting the history. So they said, oh, no, she was a leader. But so she has all these things regarding gratuity and free higher education. And higher education is a right, not a privilege. So she had all this background. Now, when she came into power, which is a few months ago, we are not really seeing that change in terms of the most important thing, as you know, financing, right? I mean, when you have, it's clear, follow the money. So in this case, she cut the budgets of UNAM and the main universities in the first draft of the budget, national budget. And later they said, oh no, it was a mistake. We didn't mean to cut the budget. Sorry, let's rearrange everything. Because imagine, she, the person, you know, dedicated to defend a free higher education, now she's not really putting the money there.
Right. Well, we'll come back to that issue in a second here. But I mean, how does she has a lot of power right now, maybe more power than AMLO had, in the sense that she's got big majorities in both houses of parliament, right? So she's got a big majority in the Chamber of Deputies, big majority in the Senate. She can almost do whatever she wants, right? So why would she try something and then back up so quickly?
Well, because she's the president of higher education and science, right? So reducing the budget as the first measure, that would have been, you know, just wrong. But the important thing here is what you just said. She has the total control of the Congress, of the Senate, and she is managing the main reforms in the country regarding the judicial system. And she's just changing a lot of laws right now. So again, education is not on the map, but also because López Obrador changed the constitution, the third article, which is related to education. So why she would do it right now?
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by Higher Education Strategy Associates, and we're pleased to be hosting a major national event on AI and higher education, the AI Academy, Canada Summit for Post-Secondary Education, which will be held March 6 to 7, 2025 in Calgary, Alberta. The summit will engage with key themes, such as the impact of AI on the future of learning and of work, the interaction between AI and teaching and learning, research and operations, and the development of institutional AI frameworks, and will include immersive opportunities for attendees to interact with the latest product, services, and technologies from leading industry partners. Tickets are selling fast. Register today and join us. Visit higheredstrategy.com or see the episode description for links.
And we're back. So Alma, let's go back to that issue about what the president proposed in the budget, I guess, last month. It included, the proposed budget was a cut of 10 billion pesos. That's about $500 million US to the higher education budget, with half of it falling directly on UNAM, was my understanding. And so there was an outcry. She's backpedaled a little bit. Like, do we know how this is going to end up? Do we have a sense of where this is, of what the final cut is going to be? Or are they going to be held whole for the next year?
Yeah, they decided to reorganize the budget. Now they are cutting to other places. Unfortunately, for instance, they are cutting to initial education, or, you know, cutting other areas. Not only in the education, but also in other parts. The Senate, I think they cut the Senate budget. They are fighting over that. But at least what they said is, well, okay, now we are putting the same money. We said we were going to continue with that, the same budget last year that was assigned, but with a little bit of a small percentage covering inflation, right?
Right.
But it's really nothing. If you compare, because some experts consider inflation was 5%, and they are just adding 3 point something.
Right.
So at the end, it's going to be less money. That's what matters. Less money to spend, right? Less money for infrastructure or materials or whatever. So, yeah, universities are somehow better, but yeah, that was a big issue a couple of weeks ago, because they were really saying this is a major contradiction that we have now this president, and she is putting us in such a bad position in terms of our budgets.
What do you think was the idea behind putting so much of the cut on UNAM? I mean, is it because there are people in the government who specifically dislike the big research university? Like, why would anyone have thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, that goes to speculations, right? I mean, some people say, yes, that was a punishment, no? To UNAM, and the punishment because UNAM has preserved independence in topics such as the judiciary reform or in topics like that. So UNAM has maintained a critical position, and Morena and Claudia are mad at UNAM. That could be. The real thing is that the first thing López Obrador did when he arrived into power 6 years ago was to modify the third article of the Constitution about education, and he erased the autonomy of universities, all of them. And I said, oh, it was a mistake. Sorry, that was not our intention. So if you add, I have friends who have written about the several mistakes, you know, there are so many mistakes. And you wonder, right?
So going back to AMLO again, I mean, one of the things that was part of his legacy, I guess, was this plan to increase the number of students in the system by about 1.5 million, if I recall correctly. And yet at the same time, he was underfunding institutions. So how did that end up by the end of his term? Did he reach that 1.5 million student goal? You know, and how did the funding crisis, you know, the underfunding play into the final result?
Yeah, right. Alex, we're in about 44% of coverage of enrollment, right, in higher education. That's very low if you compare to other Latin American countries, by the way. We always keep saying. But also, he proposed to reach 50%, López Obrador, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, but he couldn't. He fell short. And then we had now Claudia Sheinbaum, who says she wants to get to the 55%, which is, I don't think is realistic. I think, again, the tradition in Mexico is that you keep pushing 5% no matter what, no matter if the previous government didn't get, you keep pushing 5%. So I guess that's the way they do the governmental plans here.
Mm-hmm.
But for that, you need about 1,200,000 students for the 55%, which is impossible, Alex, with the system the way it is now. So, again, we have these big goals for the enrollment, but really, when you see the data, when you see where they are opening spaces, again, the spaces are not going to to the places where students want to go. So there is a clear contradiction between the goal and what they are planning to do in this case.
Right. And so part of AMLO's strategy had to do with the so-called universities of well-being, the Universities Benito Juarez, and which were a lot of small, access-oriented, that was the idea, institutions in remote parts of the country. And that idea seems to be spreading, right? So Gustavo Petro in Colombia has announced a very similar kind of project. But from our conversation 2 years ago, you were saying, there's not much behind those plans, right? They're sort of Potemkin institutions. What's the situation in the Benito Juarez universities now? Is Sheinbaum likely to continue this line of policy or no?
Yes, of course. She is not only, continuing with this project, which again, as I mentioned it then and continuing now, it's very obscure because we don't have the data. We don't know who go there, who teach there, what they learn. I have currently a student who is doing his master's degree dissertation on them, and he cannot get in, right, for simple research. So Claudia has decided to continue with universities of well-being. She, in a recent plan she presented the other day, she said, I want to open 50 more. So we really don't know what is happening with the 140. Again, the number is not very clear. You see now and then a lot of protests when the person in charge goes to these universities. People are protesting because they don't receive degrees, because they have complaints, because they don't like what they are getting. But the whole plan is to establish 50, and I won't be surprised at all that Colombia or other countries, friendly countries to Morena and Claudia, would adopt the idea. But yeah, the problem is that they are offering these places. The whole idea is that they can receive about 40,000 new places.
Right.
So with 110,000 total enrollment for the whole 6 years. So that's
right.
Language seems crazy.
Interesting. Okay. So we've been talking mainly about what's going on in the public sector. What about the private sector? I mean, Mexico has some pretty impressive private institutions. I'm thinking particularly of Tecnológico de Monterrey, or maybe institutions like Universidad Autónoma de Guadalajara. How does disarray in the public sector affect them? Does it make them stronger? Does it give them access to a bigger market or no?
I think struggling. Again, we need to distinguish between the high prestige institutions and the low prestige. So we have so many different types. But let's talk about the high prestige institutions first. They are struggling financially because some of the scholarships that they receive, for instance, for their graduate programs, have been eliminated. With this rhetoric that you only provide scholarships to the public sector, not to the private. So they used to have these very good, very decent graduate programs where many students obtain a scholarship from CONACYT, the former, CONACYT,
the science.
National Science Technology Council. So now they are creative, or they have to be more creative in terms of resources. On the other hand, you have these other institutions, low prestige, some of them as bad as the Universidades del Bienestar, Benito Juarez, with lack of quality, but the government let them be because it solves one problem, right? Which is demand. And it solves the problem that I want my kid to go to college, and this university says that it's a college, so I make an effort to pay that in order to get a degree, So I think we are in between these two extremes. Then in the middle, you have these other institutions that are also more decent in terms of the quality they provide. But still, the problem is who is making sure about the quality of these institutions. And that's the problem since before and now.
I mean, that's a pretty classic access versus quality trade-off that we see in a lot of countries, right? That's not just Mexico. Yeah. So, okay, we've had a lot of doom and gloom here, Alma. I got to ask you one question, which is, what bright spots do you think there might be in 2025? What's the best news story you think might come from the sector this year?
For Mexico?
Yeah.
Well, I wish we can have more, or I can have more ideas, right? Because the other thing, and I mean, that has to do with you as well, is North America, right? And Trump, what this is going to mean for a country like Mexico. So I don't see good news in the horizon. I see bad news. I see problems. And I see, you know, I see with a lot of sadness the fact that Mexico didn't took advantage of doing more things with the U.S. while Biden was in power, you know, agreements and all these things that we have done in the past in North America. So I don't see, unfortunately, very good news here. Although I guess, you know, in the middle of all these problems, again, you have to be creative and you have to, you know, make sure you do the best with them in the middle of the scarcity funds and all these things. But yeah, I am worried about what is going to happen once Trump gets in power regarding Mexico, migrants, the migrants that might stay here. Maybe we prepare a program, you know, to receive some migrants with higher education degrees and make sure we do better this time than when the Dreamers situation happened. But who knows? You know, I am not very confident, unfortunately, in what the government is going to do and the way the government is going to be prepared for this situation.
Yeah. Well, that's a good reminder that international affairs do intrude on higher education affairs sometime. Alma, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Alex.
And it just remains for me to thank our excellent producers, Tiffany McLennan and Samantha Pufek. And of course, you, our readers, watchers, and listeners, for joining. If you have any questions or comments about today's podcast, do get in touch with us at podcast@higheredstrategy.com. Please join us and sign up to our YouTube page. Never miss an episode of the World of Higher Education podcast. Join us next week when our guest will be Michael Shattuck. He's visiting professor at the University College of London's Institute of Education and honorary research professor at Oxford University, and he's going to be joining us to talk about governance in European universities. Bye for now.
The World of Higher Education podcast is a Higher Education Strategy Associates production, produced by Tiffany McLennan and Samantha Pufek. Hosted by Alex Usher. Music by T. Bless and the Professionals. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.